Now it's time to be educated and entertained by the country's most famous environmental scientist, Joey Bia's research grizzly bears, wolves, and birds of prey. He continues to travel all across America to bring you the very best that nature has to offer. Be ready to be amazed. Here's your host, Joey B.
Hello and welcome to Joey B. Outdoor Science and Nature. Man, do I have the coolest job. I travel all across America to bring you the very best that nature has to offer. Today, I've got a great show because the title of it is Nature and Music. And in the studio today are the composers and musicians of the song The River is Wide. Welcome Mark Roselli and Phil Constanzo.
Thank you, Joey B.
Thanks, Joey.
Hey, during our show, we will listen to a few cuts of the song. And this show is brought to you by Ramsey Outdoor Stores. Whether you shop online or in one of their stores, your experience will successfully gear you up for your next adventure. Go to RamseyOutdoor.com. So guys, here's the first question. I think it's a really cool one. From your youth through today, what are some of your musical influences? Mark?
Well, I think probably the biggest influence from my youth would be Bruce Springsteen and probably Jackson Browne, the Eagles, that genre. And then moving forward, I started getting into more singer-songwriters, mostly from Ireland, Damien Rice, and some other folks. Phil?
Yeah, no, for me it was, I had older brothers in the house, and I was into The Who when I was a young kid. The Who and Eric Clapton a lot. And like Mark, Springsteen was also one of my favorites. And I think going forward, my musical tastes expanded more into Bob Dylan. I never liked Bob Dylan as a kid, but as I got older, I really got to appreciate him.
Was it Dylan? Here's a question for you. Was it Dylan because of his songwriting? And eventually, obviously, he became a songwriter. Was it maybe that?
Yeah, no, it was a combination of his melodies were very straightforward and simple. And his lyrics were, you know, as you know, was a poet, so it was fantastic. And later on, another offshoot of him, I think, is a songwriter from the UK, David Gray, who's one of my favorites. He's kind of, I think he's an offshoot of Bob Dylan. He's got that kind of music, but a little bit more music ability in his stuff. But so I don't know, it's like a whole mesh of things for me. And I classical music, jazz. I don't know. It all kind of
put it up together.
Yeah, it comes together somehow, I guess. Yeah.
And you know, what's neat is as you talk, the two of you are speaking. You started out here with the Springsteens, etc., and then both of you sort of gravitated over to Great Britain. It's like your taste went that way.
Yes. There are some bands that I really love that I don't think influence me as a songwriter, but the jangly dream pop is a genre that I really like. There's a band called The Ocean Blue, The Railway Children, mostly British bands. Rickenbackers, they always play with Rickenbackers, so it's that sound, you know. I think you probably may have listened to some of those, like Toad the Wet Sprocket. They're from America, but, you know.
See, wait, that's one of the first bands that you mentioned other than the Springsteens of life that I knew. I mean, you got the America ones, but that one I knew, so we're good on that. So, Phil, let me ask you a question, and this is for you and then Mark. What actually brought you to music?
I came from a musical house. My dad was I call him a professional singer in the 50s. He toured with the Jimmy Roselli. He knew Tony Bennett. He made the cover of Cashbox magazine.
Oh, wow.
He did, you know, back then. But he was a family man first. And I think he had two kids at the time. And because of all his traveling, the extensive nature of what he did, he was never home. So he gave it up. Gave it up and came home and had two more kids. And I was one of them. So I'm pretty grateful that he did that. But his and my oldest brother, I'd say them really kind of listening to them play and sing kind of gravitated me towards music.
For me, you know, my folks always had music playing in the house, so that was probably the first influence. And then I have two older siblings, and I would always be hanging out in their rooms listening to what they were listening to. That's how I was introduced to Springsteen and some of the other bands. But really, it hit me, I think, in college as a musician. That's when I started getting into songwriting, and I studied architecture, and during the long nights, staying up all night working on design projects, we would talk about music, and people would play a variety of different things, and you just get bombarded by all these different bands that you never heard of before. And one particular night, one of my friends, who I didn't know was a musician, was playing guitar in the corner quietly, and I was floored because it was absolutely beautiful. I approached him and said, "Hey, listen, I love writing poetry, and I think maybe I have something that'll work with what you're playing. Is it yours?" And he said, "Yes, this is mine. I created it." So within about an hour, we had a song. We decided this is fun. We're going to keep writing. And I just, ever since, I just love songwriting. Specifically, writing lyrics is what I love to do.
That's pretty neat.
I think that's something that you said that in college. It was kind of the same experience for me as well in college. One of the things, I got very interested in Broadway musicals. I know you're thinking here. And I love, one of my favorite composers is Stephen Sondheim. And I listened to his music, and it was so provocative, and it was he would do things that were just so unique. And I took a venture into that as well, and I think from there, I wrote a musical with another person. He was lyrics and book, and I was music. And we did a short run at the John Houseman Theater, in New York back in 1995. So we're going back a bit away. So that was also an influence too. And what that really did for me, Mark, was it really made me appreciate lyrics more than anything. Because at one point I was strictly a musician, and lyrics, I'd listen to them, yeah, and they were good. But at that point, I really started to appreciate lyrics. So naturally, working with Mark, that was
That was it at that point. Now, you know what's really neat, and I'm going to say that I am sort of the culprit to this, but many people are, is that we listen to songs, but sometimes we really don't listen to the lyrics, so to speak, like you listen to it. So what I'd like to do right now is to play a cut for you of the song "The River Is Wide." It flies to how did you form your musical partnership? So Mark, this question's to you, and then to Phil.
So way back, I think around 11 years ago, I was running an event for our grammar school where our kids had gone to. I think they were in third grade, so this is back a couple years. And it was at the museum here in town, and it was an evening of music and artwork that parents provided, and I unfortunately was emceeing the event, so I was sort of preoccupied with that worry, because I've never done anything like that. But what I really wanted to do is I wanted to play that evening, and so I had a short set of original songs that I had put together, and I believe, Phil, your wife maybe had contacted my wife, right, and said, we didn't know each other at the time. I mean, maybe just through passing, and you wanted to get involved, and so we started hanging out, and we, a couple sessions into it, we're like, we realized there's something good here, and so we played our first live set that evening, and then from there, we just started writing original songs. We just, one after the other.
Yeah, no, that's kind of it. What the reason why I think I contacted you, Mark, was because I think you gave me a copy of a CD of your band you were in, and it was all original music. It was a band called Shelf Life. Plug.
Yeah, that's all right. Hey, we plug it all here. So yes, you can get that Shelf Life. We'll talk about how you can listen to that later on. Go ahead, Bill.
So I listened to the CD, and I really liked it. I mean, I really liked it. And in particular, I liked the lyrics quite a bit, too. Quite a bit. And at that point, I said, no, I got to contact this guy. So I did. You know, from there, like Mark said, we got together. We started just jamming. And then we prepared some music for that event. And then from then, we grew into more of our own material, writing collectively together. So
that's neat. Now, let me ask you, and this is for both of you, what's the process when you, just a song? So we're going to go back to The River Is Wide in a few, but when you're writing a song, what's the process? Like, what's your thought involved? Phil?
That's a tough question. You know, music is sometimes could be so sporadic. You know, just you get like a lyric in your head, you get a melody, a chorus from a melody in your head, and you pick out a guitar and you just start picking it, and then you just sing. I call BS lyrics, because that's what I do. You know, I just BS lyrics, and then Mark takes it over for his lyrics. But, And it grows from there, I think, you know. And that's just from my perspective. Yeah. I think Mark may have a different perspective on writing, but for me, that's pretty much what I like to do.
Yeah, I think it varies, and you can't really peg it to be a certain formula. But and I've done it many different ways. Sometimes the lyrics come first. Sometimes the melody is there. But with Phil, I think predominantly what happens, and it's happened a lot, especially with this recent collection, Phil has a great depth in his sonic abilities. You play so many different instruments. You have a lot of instrumentation, instrumentals, and it's funny, you mentioned the BS lyrics, but in a way, you set up an empty canvas for me, and you have a chorus in mind. Sometimes you have a title in mind, and I think The River Is Wide, you actually had the title. You sort of wanted it to be named The River Is Wide. You had the chorus sort of written, and it makes my job a lot easier. It's a lot of fun because it's floating there, and then I just take over. And what we typically do is we'll sit, we'll talk about a song before we actually jump into it, and I record everything. I have a little digital recorder. It's a burden because I have so many different files that I could go back into, but I'll take our conversation and some of the initial things Phil had said, and I'll run with that, and then I'll record him playing the instrumental without any vocals, even the BS lyrics or whatever, and then one with you singing a little bit, and then I just take that. I live with it for a couple days or a week or whatever, and when we get back together, sometimes, and most of the time, a song is pretty much formed, and then we just tweak it from there.
Yeah, for the most part, yeah. Right? I'd say, yep.
We've written together, too, though, and so, you know, there's so many different ways to collaborate, and it's a lot of fun, you know.
Well, I'm sure every song has got to be different, the way you're collaborating, so you're describing one way, and there's another way the two of you might just be together, and it's a little jam of some sort, and some pieces together.
Definitely.
Well, this show is brought to you by Barkerstown Brew, the advanced hydration drink for dog. 6 natural great flavors. Go to BarkerstownBrew.com. So, gentlemen, what I want to know now is the song The River Is Wide. Let's talk specifically about writing the lyrics for this song. And again, we're going to play a few more cuts as we go along here. And by the way, listeners, you will get a chance to listen to the whole song. So don't fast forward. You got to listen to the whole deal here. But the whole song will be played at the end of this show. So this song, how did the lyrics come about? Because as I read through it and listen to it, I've got some great comments about it. Gentlemen.
Mark, I think you could probably answer this better than I can, right?
Yeah, so again, Phil had set up the chorus and the melody, basically, you know. And the concept of The River Is Wide, basically, the image I had was a place that maybe you had visited or a person had visited in their childhood. They wanted to return as an adult. Or a place that they've heard of and that they want to see for themselves. So the chorus, to me, it's sort of sad in a way because it's talking about a place that used to be, or it's describing what used to be. And the verses, then so I decided to take the verses and describe a journey. Someone who, you know, maybe it's on a Friday night, left the city, left his job or her job, and decided, I'm going to go into nature for the weekend and, you know, decompress and witness the grandness of nature. So it's a journey to this place. So the verses basically are sort of joyful. They're describing someone walking through and witnessing beauty, and with the goal to see this place that they remember or that they've heard of. And then, you know, they get to it and they realize it's a place that used to be grander, maybe in their own mind or maybe because of the changes that the world is going through, industry up the river somewhere, or, you know, who knows, man's effect on nature. So,
yeah, I think that really hits it on the head. For me, it was originally, I was at a very young age, there was a commercial that used to be on TV, and I don't know if you guys remember this. It was a Native American, okay, and he would be by this river, okay, and it was polluted, and you can see the tear.
And I remember that commercial. As you're saying that, right. I vividly remember that commercial.
Yes. That's, to me, that was the first image I had.
Yeah.
Was and then you obviously took it and made it into something really powerful. But the image that I have initially was this Native American who is looking at this, at one time, this beautiful river. And now, because of what you just said, Mark, because of business, because of progress, we want to call it, whatever it is, you know, how we've polluted our environment, global warming, whatever the case may be. Yeah. But that was that commercial, for some reason, stuck in my head, you know, and 40-some-odd years later, boom, you know, it came out.
It's funny that you say that, because I don't remember specifically talking about that, but I had that image, too, because that was a powerful commercial from when we were kids. And you know, maybe we did talk about it and I don't remember. The bridge is sort of the angry part of the song where, you know, as you're surrounded by nature and you're thinking about where you are and perhaps the people that used to live on at this area or, you know, on this soil, you know, there's an angry part of this just, you know, it's hard to describe, but I think, you know, the disappointment with people maybe being displaced and you know, men coming in and taking over a certain area.
That's exactly it. You know, and that at that point, it really drives the whole point, in my opinion, the whole point of the song across is from that bridge on. Hmm. You know, at that point, it's this statement of, what did we do? What happened? You know, we have this beautiful planet, and we don't truly have an appreciation of it.
Well, you know what? In a lot of my shows as an environmental scientist, I talk about two P's all the time, protect and preserve. And I'm listening to now your description of what's going on and from that bridge and on, and you're saying, okay, well, are we protecting and preserving our natural lands? And that is an important thing because for future generations, but for that person, as Mark, as you described it, who just maybe wanted to go out for the weekend and just get back to nature, and they're going to a place that's not there, or going to a place that was once there that they knew of and has changed. And so as you're describing that, and if we don't protect and preserve, then we're putting ourselves at risk, but future generations at risk as well. And as I listen to your lyrics, and I have a few comments here, because once again, I am a culprit where I like to listen to sometimes music, songs. I was a music minor in college. I don't know if you guys know that. And I listened to it, but this one here I keyed in because I listened to the song over and over. I liked it very much so. And before we came into the studio, we were downstairs chatting, and I mentioned about rattlesnakes because that's one of your... And right away, Mark, I believe it was you, go, I don't like them.
Yeah, I think they, you know, they represent, for me... fear and danger and you know, something that that just gives me nightmares. And I think that's a kind of a glimpse into the angry portion of the song.
And, you know, it's funny that my comment to you guys is I love rattlesnakes. And it's one of my, like when I'm on stage or I'm speaking at a school and I specifically speak about them because right away people have that. But it's my job to change the image of the bad guy. And I do it, by the way, I'm going to do one for you. I do a rattlesnake with my voice, and I chat with things. But they are really, really cool animals, and the only reason why they rattle is basically to tell a large predator, don't come near me, don't step on me, for no other reason. I have walked doing some of my grizzly bear research. We're at the top of the Rockies, and I've described this before, and I'm walking on these loose boulders, but there are prairie rattlesnakes all throughout it, and as you're walking over the rocks, they could feel the vibrations of you going over, and as far as they're concerned, it's a large predator, and the rocks are just going, and you walk somewhere else, and there was rattlesnakes everywhere, and it was just, to me, it's like I'm saying from my perspective, that's cool. I don't know about you.
You're describing a nightmare. That's a Stephen King story right there.
Now, one of your other things, you described about valleys, cliffs, and lakes, and the image that came to my mind when I was doing some of my plant research out in the sagebrush steppe out in Idaho, we were on an extinct volcano, and I'm standing on the rim of it, looking down into it, but looking into the whole area there. And so some of your lyrics, or I should actually say all of your lyrics, put an image into my mind. You're talking about campfires and constellations. Well, I have been in the middle of like nowhere USA, just with a group of scientists, top of the Rockies, doing some research, and you have that campfire going. We're just sitting there, and you're looking at every star that you, because, you know, the three of us growing up in the East, and with light pollution, once again, man's interference, you don't see, you barely see a constellation. You get out there, and it's like somebody, now I'm going to use, so maybe you'll write this in one of your songs, but it's like literally somebody painted the sky with white, because that's how many stars are out there. So as you're describing that in your song, that's the thought that comes to my mind. Now, the morning dew, and I told you guys I had a story for you, is this. When I was doing my grizzly bear research, I was making a peanut butter and honey sandwich, and some of the honey dripped down on my pants. So you're up in the Rockies, and you got your backpack and all your research gear. Well, you only have one pair of pants because, you know, you can't carry much. So now I've got honey on my pants. I can't bring them into the tent at night because I don't need to be. And I would always say that if you bring food in your tent, you've just become a burrito for a bear. So that's not a place you want to take food into. So I actually had to take my pants, put them in my food bag, tie them up in a tree. So I'm coming out in the mornings, and it's like 20 degrees, 30 degrees, and I don't have any pants on. And I've got to get them out of a tree, so I got the morning dew on my boots, with in my underwear, trying to, like, so, like, the comical side of this is I got to get the pants out of the tree before I can even make breakfast. So, like, I heard the morning dew, and I'm going, that was, like, part of me on that one. You talk about a selfless guide and how many times I have drifted down the Snake River in Wyoming, which is one of my, you always hear me go, this is my favorite place. Well, it's one of my favorite rivers. I fly fished it. I've rafted it. I've whitewater rafted, slow water rafted, kayaked. Like, I spend so much time there. And like, I've been with guides, but then I am the selfless guide, so to speak, when I'm on there. And sometimes the river is just guiding me, and I don't mind that. It's like just taking me along. And my last one, and I think is an important one, is you mentioned about reservation land. And I love everything about the Native American culture. One of my great friends, Jim Bruschak, his father, Joe Bruschak. Joe is the number one writer of Native American tales. Jim has taken over his dad and written many books about it. And so there is, the Native American people are such a proud people, and their culture is such a great culture. And I'm just so happy that the two of you included that into your song. So that was my little spiel about what I got out of your song. So I'm going to ask you now to tell me about your latest project, Two Rivers, One Town. Mark?
Well, the concept, and it's sort of a concept album, I'm going to say album, we don't know if it's going to be a double CD or just released on iTunes. We're trying to work that out right now. The concept is, it's a collection of 8 original songs, and we have 2 versions of each song. And a loose formula is, I sing lead on one, Phil sings lead on the other version. That's sort of the loose formula, although there's some songs that doesn't...
Yeah, they overlap.
Yeah.
That's, by the way, that's a cool concept. That's pretty neat, guys. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I think with our songwriting process and some of the people we mentioned, like especially Springsteen, he has so much material that's unreleased or versions of songs that we know that are totally different. So the process of songwriting is so interesting because sometimes when you let a lot of time go by, the song morphs into something else. And I think Phil's notorious for that. I think we have 3 versions of this song over the years. I thought the song was complete, and then, you know, we would revisit it a couple months later, and Phil said, I actually had rewritten this, and you have to write new lyrics. And I'm like, no, not again. But, you know, for the best. So anyway, to make a long story short, we have two versions of each song because it really showcases, I think, our songwriting process.
Right. I agree. It's unique in a sense. We try to make, and Mark, we try to make each version different. Musically, lyrically, we there are some tweaks as well, but I think musically we try to make them where they just can be two separate songs, almost. Mm-hmm. Almost, to a degree, you know? And it was just the concept, like, well, Mark said, Bruce Springsteen, you'd listen to his music, and then, like, all of a sudden, he would release these, like, these tracks that were never made into an album, and they were other versions of his songs, and you'd listen to them, and you're like, wow, man, that is, like, that is so cool. And I think that kind of was a big influence for us to take that approach.
Yes.
And you know, it's funny, and again, we mentioned Bruce, and it's a big influence on all of our lives. This is about a year ago. I'm driving down in Asbury Park, New Jersey, and the house that he grew up, that he wrote many of the songs, was for sale. And I drove by the house, and I looked at it. By the way, I'm looking to get back to farming and buy a farm. And I'm going, no, but I just thought it was so cool that, you know, somebody could purchase that home, really. And it wasn't that much money. I don't remember what it was, but it wasn't like you would say, well, the house that Bruce grew up in, wrote, you know, Thunder Road or whatever it was, that's the house. And you, and it wasn't that much for, I said it should be worth more. But anyway, let's get off the shrine to Bruce. And Phil, let me ask you, how can people find out about your music? Where can they go to get your music?
Right now, it's really, we have a Facebook page, but we need to, Mark and I have been exploring different avenues to promote the music. SoundCloud being one, of course, mm-hmm. right? We're looking at iTunes as a possibility, or release a double CD, okay, that people can purchase through, like, CD Baby, one of the cases. But, like, right now, unfortunately, we don't really have too many outlets for this music.
Yes.
And we really need, that's one thing we both agree on.
Yes.
We need to put things aside and say, okay, let's figure this out, and how can we promote this?
Yes. Yeah. Bandcamp is another point of to listen for free, actually. We have it set up. We'll release The River Is Wide on Bandcamp, the two versions,
yeah.
And then the full group of songs, we're hoping by the end of the year we're going to be able to officially release that, definitely on iTunes, and then we're debating the double CD. Unfortunately, it's long enough where it doesn't fit on one CD, so now we're faced with, you know, that expense of two CDs, which would be really cool. I think I'm still a CD guy.
Me too.
But I don't think there are many people out there that are, so it might not be worth the expense at this point, but we'll have to determine that.
Well, you know what's neat is, as you're describing all this, and social media, like, there's two sides to it. You guys are the writers, the musicians, but then there is that media side, the social media to, you know, let people know. What I will do is, in future shows and through all my social media, I have my social media person every day. When you do a release, and however you release it, I will let people know that they are out there, that they can listen to it. So that's a great thing. So Phil, I wanted to thank you for coming into the studio.
Thank you. This was great. Thank you.
And Mark, thank you.
Thanks very much.
This is a great thing. And we'll end the show now. So please listen to the song by Mark Roselli, Phil Constanzo, The River Is Wide.
Been hacking along a sad winding back trail of bleeds, with the sun burning down upon the backs of these shining diamond deeds. Keeping company in the wild brush is a patient rattlesnake, which takes me to the place where the river is wide. Constellations tell the story of the open mind.
You can follow all of my adventures online at joeybee.tv. That's joeybee.tv. And a very special thank you to the men and women of our armed forces for keeping us free, and for our police and firefighters for keeping us safe. May God bless America. Until next time, this is Joey B. Enjoy life's adventures.